3-2. Swinging a high fly ball out to left field, down the line, and it is gone! Three-run home run for Danny Jansen. His fourth of the season is an absolute no-doubter.
Hey, what's going on? It's At The Letters for Thursday, May 26th, brought to you by Miller Lite, the original light beer. Erden Zwelling and Ben Nicholson Smith, our producers this week, are Mike Rogerson and Nick Andrade. And Ben, I wanted to start with an email this week because I feel like we don't go to the emails enough. And as people know, you can email us at theletters@sportsnet.ca. Please send us your thoughts all the time. We do respond to them, and we often just kind of like send replies via the emails. I feel like we don't read enough of them on the podcast, and this one is like so representative of I think a lot of the feelings amongst Blue Jays fans and observers over this month of May, when the offense has just been woeful, one of the worst in baseball, and honestly like really difficult to watch on a nightly basis as the Blue Jays play the same game over and over and over again, with the exception of course of Tuesday's game in St. Louis when they finally broke out for 8 runs, but that's been the exception to the rule this year. So here's an email that we received. Quote, "The Jays are suffering from batting problems and not making adjustments. They are chasing balls out of the zone and are consistently facing high velocity fastballs. There are adjustments you can make. You must have plate discipline. The Jays are immature in their approach. I wish Bo's dad was still with the Jays. He has a unique approach to hitting. I believe he would make a difference. The Jays hitting coach bears some responsibility." End quote. And I did edit that for clarity, just so everyone knows. So do you think that's sort of representative of how a lot of people are feeling right now, Ben?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I would say that I get more questions about Dante Bichette than I get about Bo Bichette some days. You know, it's like, it's yeah. you almost like it's he's really on people's minds. And I understand. I mean, so the hitting has been so bad. They have really underperformed. They are expanding. They are not playing to their potential. They do look lost at the plate. There is no easy, obvious explanation for this. And so I understand, you know, thinking about Dante Bichette and what he might be able to do. He's a respected former major league hitter. He's worked with a lot of hitters on this team. And clearly he's helped with Bo and others. So I get it. I get the impulse, and we can kind of dive into this from a few angles here, Arden, but my kind of first impression when I hear those is I think Dante could help maybe a little bit, like incrementally, but what's going on here is way bigger than what one coach can or cannot do.
Yeah, and so there's two things there. Like first on like kind of the micro and on Dante Bichette, like do you think that Dante Bichette's really a hard guy for Vladimir Guerrero Jr. to reach right now? Vlad's got his number. Vlad can send him a text anytime. He can send him video. He can ask him for advice. If Dante's seeing something, he can text Vlad. He could text Bo and say, hey, mention this to Vlad. I think that if Dante's input is required or like is wanted, that it'll be there. Like I think Dante's going to be very willing to help any Blue Jays hitter. It's not like the Blue Jays have discouraged their athletes from seeking outside resources. Like you look at over this past offseason, like Ryan Barucki and the mechanical tweaks that he made to his delivery, he made those with Anthony Telford. He was there working with him with Nate Pearson, and Danny Jansen was there as well. Guys have gone to Driveline. Guys have, Vladimir Guerrero Jr.'s got his whole crew in the Dominican that he works out with. So I think that if Dante's perspective is desired, like it'll be there no problem whether or not he's on the payroll. But like on the macro, I also really don't understand what firing Guillermo Martinez or any of the Blue Jays hitting coaches is going to accomplish at this juncture. I don't know how that's tangibly going to help matters. I don't think that there's somebody who has this magic idea who you can bring in is going to say, hey, why don't you guys just try this? And all of a sudden the Blue Jays bats are going to come alive. If anything, I think a lot of the process indicators with the Blue Jays have been pretty strong. Like they hit the ball really hard and they hit it in the air a lot. Vladimir Guerrero Jr. notwithstanding, he's hitting it on the ground way too much. But I think the Blue Jays have had like really solid quality of contact, one of the highest hard hit rates as a club in the majors, some very high expected stats in terms of batting average and slugging percentage. Like, I think it's just a matter of patience and a matter of time for things to come back around. I don't think that there's anybody out there who has this magic solution who can come in and just fix things with like one fell swoop. And I also don't think there's anybody on the coaching staff who is like sabotaging the work of the Blue Jays at the plate and who needs to be excised in order for these players to perform. I really do not think this is a coaching issue.
Yeah, it's so, you know, there's so much going on when you have so many different swings and so many different hitters and even different opponents. Like, the Jays have faced some really tough opponents. Not an excuse. It's Major League Baseball. You have to produce. But there's a lot going on. There's a lot that happens behind the scenes. And so switching any one aspect of their preparation is not going to turn everything around in an instant. And I think in May, like, they have been bad. They have been one of the worst offensive teams in baseball. So that's bad. And especially relative to expectations and what they should do and what they have done in the past, that's even worse. You know, this isn't the Oakland Athletics. Like, you expect the Jays to be good. They haven't. So it's a problem. But, you know, I do think that a hitting coach, a pitching coach, a manager, you know, I think that you're allowed to have a period of time where your group is underperforming. Like, I think that for Guillermo Martinez, who we're obviously talking about here, isn't he allowed to have a bad month? Aren't his hitters allowed to have a bad month? You know, are we going to be that reactive that one, you know, we're not even through the month of May. It's May 26th as we record this. You know, 26 days of a bad month, that means you're fired? Like, that's, I don't know. That's pretty...
It's pretty reactionary.
It is. It is very reactionary, and it's a results business. And I think if this continues and it's June 15th or June 20th, you know, at some point a personnel change would be made. I get that. It's Major League Baseball. But I don't know if 26 days is that threshold.
Well, and I don't know that there's one coach who's solely responsible for the performance of 12 hitters either. Like, I think that's kind of antiquated thinking. Like, that's like the line of thinking that like Pete Walker is magic and he is solely responsible right. for Robbie Ray and Yusei Kikuchi and Steven Matz and on and on, when we know he's just the tip of the spear, right? Like, we know there are so many more people that go into this. On a modern coaching staff, like, it's a much more collaborative approach. And like, let's be clear, Blue Jays hitters do not suffer for a lack of resources. This front office has provided a wealth of data, of resources, of tools, of ways to get better. Like, if you're a Blue Jays hitter, if you really want to drill down on something specific in your mechanics, well, there's Hunter Mentz who can help you out with that. Like, if you want to talk about like game planning and strategy, there's Dave Hudgens. You can talk to him about that. Like, are you maybe having trouble controlling your emotions in the box or like kind of keeping your mind clear? Jimmy Van Ostrand is on this staff and going to help you out with that. Like there are so many people who contribute to the performance of hitters and of position players on this club beyond just Guillermo Martinez, who like obviously does a ton of work with these guys. Like, we're at the Rogers Center all the time and we are walking by those new hitting cages that they have set up there. They have big glass windows and every day I walk by and Guillermo's in there working with somebody, Hunter Mentz is in there working with somebody. Like, there's a ton of stuff that goes on behind the scenes. But that sort of gets to another point, right? Like, you fire a coach in season if he isn't fulfilling the responsibilities of his job, right? So if he's like showing up late or there's like hitters before a game who are looking for him to work with him on stuff and they can't find him, or he isn't answering his phone for when the GM calls, like he's ignoring, you know, analysis and input and feedback that's coming from other departments, whether it's like analytics or advanced scouts, if he's like clashing with other members of the coaching staff, he's like going rogue, he's doing his own thing, he's not collaborating. Like those would all be reasons why you would dismiss somebody in season, I think. But like 23, 24 games of poor performance from 12 hitters, I really don't think that is a reason to fire your hitting coach. If anything, I think that sort of instability, that sort of like environment and culture where it's, hey, if things don't go well for 3 weeks, the heads are going to start rolling, I don't think that's conducive to success. And I don't think that's a productive place for athletes to feel their most comfortable and to perform their best. Like, I don't think that's an environment and that's a place that you really want to work. So I can't imagine the Blue Jays doing something like that.
Well, and we've said this before too, but it's worth remembering. Guillermo Martinez was the hitting coach when they had the best offense, most home runs, highest OPS that in too. The American League last year, right? So he can do it. And it's not as though, I was talking to some people around the Jays this week about this topic, just the hitting and the offense, because there is pressure and these guys are pressing. I think there's no way to measure this, but I'm confident in saying that they're pressing. They are putting pressure on themselves. It is impacting them mentally. It is impacting their approach. That's not good. You do not want that. But again, it's not that these guys can't perform under pressure, because think about last year. Yeah, they missed the playoffs, but every single game in the month of September, even August, it had so much significance. They were under so much pressure to produce and win and hit, and they didn't ultimately win enough, but they definitely hit enough, and they were really productive as a group. So they can handle pressure. We saw at the start of this year, they can produce. You know, of course, there's kind of the negligence of the job, you know, that if it got to that point, of course, you're going to move on. There's even maybe a more subtle version where, like, if the coach has kind of lost the ear of the players and they just don't care what he says anymore, what she says anymore, they don't want to listen, they don't want to engage. At that point, even if the person's showing up on time, it might be time to just move on. But I don't think we're there. And, you know, they scored 8 runs on Tuesday, so that's a good step for a team that really, I mean, just being around them after that game, like, you could kind of feel the load lighten a little bit with that group.
Well, and you even said, right, like, if this got to June 15th and this was still occurring, you think there would be a personnel change made, or you think there'd be a possibility of one?
Yeah.
I just don't know what we've seen from this front office to, like, to suggest that that's something that they would do. Like, even at that point, we'd still only be talking about 6 weeks. Like, I still think we'd be in the realm of something pretty reactionary. Like you said, yeah. Like, it was, you know, Guillermo Martinez was the hitting coach for all of 2021. It was one of the best offenses in baseball. That's 6 months of data versus 6 weeks. And, like, what do we know about this front office? Like, very process-oriented, rational, methodical. Like, they don't do things based on whims and emotions.
Yeah.
Like, they like to have real clear, like, reasons and evidence and, like, belief that this change is necessary and is going to have, like, a tangible benefit going forward. And look, they do make changes, like, to the coaching staff. They've made them each of the last several off seasons, right? Like, because they do their exit interviews and they assess how things went the prior season, and then they make adjustments, right? Like, Dave Hudgens isn't the bench coach anymore. John Schneider now handles that tactical in-game decision making, and Dave Hudgens has shifted into more of a position where he's working with the hitters and doing more pregame stuff on a day-to-day basis, right? Like, Gil Kim came out of, like, the development role that he was in a front office role, onto the bench in uniform every day to work on practice design and to work on daily scheduling. Adam Udelman came in to help out with data and metrics and things like this. So, like, the Blue Jays have made adjustments to their coaching staff because maybe things weren't as efficient the year prior. Things weren't working the way they wanted them to. They thought this would be a better approach. But they do that in the offseason and they have the time to, like, reflect and think, and they just have a larger sample on which to reflect. I really just don't think that even 6 weeks of a team slumping offensively would be cause for a change to coaching. I think it'd be cause for a change to, like, player personnel. Maybe now that's when you're like, all right, like, let's bring up a Moreno or a Groshans, or let's make a trade early. Like, let's do something to just get a different look on our offense and bring in, like, a different look to our batting order. But I don't think that change would come to the coaching staff.
Yeah, I think, I mean, that's a rational way to look at it. You know, with all these things, and, you know, I suspect you might agree with me on this, with all these things, if you're in the position of being a Ross Atkins, you're going to be talking to your players. You're going to say, where are you mentally? How are things going in the cages? You're going to kind of get a feel for how things are progressing and how that relationship is going with the coaching staff, because that is really important, because this season is so important. So those answers would inform whatever decision is made. Of course, to me, you know, as a ballpark outside looking in, the date that I would choose is kind of June 15th. And we are a long way right now from June 15th.
And so here's the thing, throughout this month, the Blue Jays, like, quote unquote, like, we'll see if it was an offensive breakout against St. Louis. It might just be an aberration. They might go back to scoring one or two runs a night and our inbox might be flooded with, you idiots, you fools.
Yeah.
You know, for the first, like, 23 days of the month, I said the Blue Jays bat's going to come around. This offense is going to break out. It's too talented. These hitters have too much track record. We've seen baseball seasons before. Like, it's going to happen. And, like, 23 times I was wrong. and once I was right, that 24th time against Jordan Hicks and the St. Louis Cardinals, and the Blue Jays scored 8 runs on a night where, you know, if they had scored 5, we would have been saying, wow, what an offensive breakout. But like, I keep betting on this offense, and I will continue to, because of those process indicators, because I'll bet on an offense that's hitting the ball really hard, like an offense that is top 10 in barrel rate, top 10 in expected BA, expected slugging, hard hit rate, exit velocity, an offense that puts the ball in play really hard, and an offense that we are seeing making better swing decisions, which was like really a huge thing against Jordan Hicks and in really the entire game against St. Louis Cardinals. I think Blue Jays drew like 8 walks in that game on Tuesday, whenever that was, you were there. If you're making good swing decisions, if you're putting the ball in play hard, if you're barreling it consistently, I'll bet on those things because I think those are good predictors of future success. I don't think the performance with running with runners in scoring position is a predictor of future success, but I do think that like swing decisions, hard hit rate, those are predictors, and I'm seeing those from the Blue Jays on top of the track record that I and the talent that I was already betting on. So I'll continue to bet on this offense.
Yeah, I agreed. I still think it's a good offense. I really do.
People are like, these two guys are insane. Like, they're not like, what are they watching? They aren't watching this team. That's what people are thinking right now. Cause they're like, what are you guys watching if you think this is a good offense?
I assure you, Arden and I are dialed in. We watch a lot of Toronto Blue Jays, but I can hear those responses as well. And I understand it, right? I understand like they've been so bad. They've been so bad, but I think they're going to be good. I don't know if a lot of people agree with that, but there's concern within this offense. Okay. So even though I think it's a good offense, I think there are a couple areas that are concerning to me that I could go on for a while. I mean, after the last few weeks,
the floor is yours for the next 10 minutes.
Yeah, exactly. I'll throw two hitters at you. Okay. So first, briefly, Vlad Guerrero Jr. It's not that he can't hit fastballs, but Mike Petriello had a good article examining this today. He's not getting as many fastballs. And when he gets them, they are not often in the heart of the plate, over the plate, up where Vladdy destroys them. So pitchers have caught on to that. He's not getting as many fastballs to hit. So that's a problem because it demands an adjustment of Vladdy, and sometimes he's made it and sometimes he hasn't. But that's one. And then two is Teoscar Hernandez. He is barreling balls sometimes, but when he does, it's in the ground. We're seeing a 60% ground ball rate from a guy who was in the 30s for most of his career. And again, I know some of this is timing. Some of this is just getting back from the oblique. I think he will get there. But right now, we're seeing some of the worst at-bats I've seen from Teoscar in years. And he set the bar really high. And again, hitters are entitled to slumps once in a while. They're not metronomes. They're going to have an ebb and flow to their production. But right now, I am not seeing good at-bats from Teoscar. And the contact that I'm seeing, even when it's hard, is too often into the ground.
The Teoscar one, I like cannot figure out for the life of me. And I've tried. I can't explain it. His timing is so, so off. And hitting his timing at the end of the day, and maybe just him coming back from an oblique issue, just as the Blue Jays ran into this line of like 98, 99, this dude throws 101, this dude only throws 96. And you feel like it's a break from the velocity that you're seeing. Probably didn't help him, I guess. And probably didn't help his timing. I think if you're a Blue Jays fan, you hope that's what it is. I can't figure it out with Teoscar. It is like confounding to me, like just how bad he looks at the plate right now. I think you trust the last 2 years, but with him, you also know that prior to that, like he was like a quad A outfielder for a reason, right? So you kind of hope that he hasn't regressed back to that. And you hope that he can continue being like, maybe not the back-to-back Silver Slugger guy, but something approaching it, certainly something much better than what the Blue Jays are seeing right now from him. And I really don't have any answers with Vlad. You can look at, like you said, a lot of the things Petriello brought up, a lot of things you just mentioned. It's funny, like you can just draw a horizontal line through the strike zone, like waist high with Vlad, and anything above it, he is barreling, and anything below it is going right into the ground. And he is just not hitting anything down into the air at high speeds towards walls. And he's seeing a ton of pitches down. And sometimes when he does get his pitch above that line, he is missing it.
Yeah.
There have been some very hittable pitches that he has either like fouled straight back or swung right through on the plate, which is like, whoa, like Vladimir Guerrero Jr. missed that. Like that is a ball that he would have demolished in 2021. So there is something going on there with his swing that is like way beyond what I'm able to deduce and figure out, because I'm not a hitting coach and I don't know mechanics and I can't look into his like his load and his movements and what he's doing with his hips and his shoulders and all these things. It is bat plane, but like there is clearly something there, an adjustment, a tweak to be made there. Like we've seen him throughout this year go from chasing to not chasing, right? Like we know he's able to make that adjustment. We've seen him recognizing the way he's being pitched and laying off of, like, you know, that down and away slider that he's continually getting. So we know he's capable of these adjustments. And I think there is one to be made so that he makes better fly ball contact on those pitches below that line and also the ones above that he really should be demolishing, those mistakes that he should be feasting on. I don't know what that tweak is, but I know it's there for him to make, and I think that would help unlock a lot because the exit velos are still there, still hits the ball as hard as anybody. So it's just kind of like a point of contact thing, I think, more so than a quality of contact.
Well, yeah, and you know, you talk to some people around the team and it's like, it's not that he's getting zero pitches to hit, it's just that too often he's missing a pitch when he does get it. And I think Vladdy would say the same thing. It was interesting in that Tuesday night game where they finally scored 8 runs. He went up to Charlie Montoyo in the dugout and he said, I've got my timing back. I'm starting to get it back. And then homered afterwards. So that was a great sign. Montoyo was really excited about that. Obviously, Vladdy was encouraged by that. You know, he's got a lot more kind of proving to do after what has been a really rough month for him. But I think it's worth remembering too, like, it was just last month that he was taking 98 in off the plate from Gerrit Cole over the fence at Yankee Stadium in a 3-home run game. So the ability is there. The timing's a bit off. The pitching has been tough and the pitchers are pitching him especially tough. They are game planning for him like never before. And now it's on him to make that adjustment. But man, he has the ability to make that adjustment.
Yeah. And man, Ben, he's only been a 130 weighted runs created plus play.
Yeah.
Right? Like even through this 130 WRC plus, it's like a top 50 mark across baseball. Like that's like, you know, second best on the Blue Jays behind George Springer. I mean, he still has been like really good, but the bar that we measure him against is just MVP. Right. And we also like think of him as a veteran when he's a year younger than Adley Rutschman. Is the other thing, right? You think about it, Adley Rutschman.
That's a good way to put it. And yeah, that's interesting.
Adley Rutschman just debuted and you watch that triple that he hit and the announcers are like, what a moment for this kid, this youngster just getting his feet wet at the big league level. And it's like, Vlad's a year younger, Bo's a month younger than Adley Rutschman. I mean, these guys are still so young. The one thing, and this is super, super small sample, breaking balls over the heart of the plate. So I'm talking about like hung sliders, hung curve balls, things like that. 2021 breaking balls over the heart of the plate. So that's attack zones 1-9 on Baseball Savant. It was a 1266 OPS against 145 pitches. This year, it's 783 OPS against 44 pitches. It's a drop in isolated power from 541 to 261. So that's like a 300 point drop nearly. He's not crushing the good pitches to hit. That just speaking to like your point and to what people are telling you is that like he's getting good pitches to hit and he is not walloping them like he was. But it looked like you wanted to, sorry, I went too far, to react to the Rutschman thing there, because Vlad is a year younger than him.
Then both of those guys, how about that?
Bo is a month younger.
That's actually really telling, because you know these guys are, and Bo went through it too in April, and defensively, offensively, you know, we expect so much of them, but they are younger than Rutschman. That is wild.
Yeah, no, and Bo's got 50 bombs in the big leagues, and like Vlad's got a runner-up MVP finish and like would have won it if not for the existence of like a mythical beast that none of us have. And by the way, like we're going to see Shohei Ohtani here on Thursday night, recording this on Thursday. Like it is criminal how desensitized we are to the fact that like this guy exists and is doing this again in another season. Like I know he hasn't quite been like the peak of last year. He's actually gotten a lot better as a pitcher this year.
Yes.
If you kind of dive into it, he's in the zone a lot more. His stuff is just unhittable. Like the fact that there is a single player who has like a 125 WRC plus and like a 2.8 ERA in significant samples, like on both sides, a guy who throws like as hard as anybody, fastball sits 97, 98, and also has like the hardest hit ball in MLB this year. Average exit velo in the top 10% of hitters. Like there aren't words for it. Every time this guy plays, we should all be like, holy crap, holy crap, holy crap, what's happening? This is insane. He's unbelievable and just a treat to get to be watching baseball at a time when this like singular generational talent is playing every night.
Oh, it's so fun to watch what Shohei Ohtani can do. It's incredible. And there's so little he can't do because he's a great base runner too. You know, if it wasn't for Aaron Judge, to me right now, is the front runner for AL MVP. Of course, it's early, but you know, I like to keep an eye on these things. And I think Aaron Judge, you know, he has to be the favorite at this point, given what he's doing for the Yankees and how good they've been and just the incredible power. But I think Shohei is in that discussion again and toward the top of that discussion. And so it's going to be really interesting to see how that race kind of plays out, because those two guys right now are just having incredible seasons.
And you just caused me to kind of order the American League by weighted runs created plus. And I do see that Mike Trout is leading all of baseball, really.
Of course.
In weighted runs created plus. That's how you know that we're out of the small sampleness of a season. Like we're out of its early territory. When Mike Trout is leading MLB in weighted runs created plus, then you know the sample's big enough and you can trust the numbers.
Yeah, it'll be a fun series. Like to see the Angels actually playing pretty well. They've always had the incredible star power. Now we'll see them against the Jays for four games. It's cool. I mean, to see Vladdy, obviously, Bo, the stars on the Jays, Springer against Shohei and Mike Trout, that's pretty much one of the better matchups that you're going to find in all of me. And I know we're a Jays podcast, but in all of Major League Baseball, that's one of the better matchups that you're going to find.
Yeah, no doubt about that. We're going to step away, but when we come back, we should probably talk about the pitching because that's what's carried the Blue Jays through this. It's not all just the quiet bats. Imagine where the Blue Jays would be if they didn't have an actual, honest to goodness, really, really strong starting rotation. We'll get into that and so much more when it continues on At the Letters. It continues on At the Letters. Arden Zwelling, Ben Nicholson Smith, our producers this week are Nick Andrade and Mike Rogerson. And it is time now for Keeping It Light, brought to you by Miller Lite, the original light beer. And Ben, there are always ones that get away from every organization. No front office is perfect in keeping the good players and letting the bad ones go. And, you know, for the Blue Jays, there's always going to be some players that they probably might look back on and say, hey, I probably should have kept that guy. This season, who are some of the more notable ex-Blue Jays who you think are having really strong years?
You know, I think one guy who has to be on the short list for Blue Jay you would most want back, and this is going back a few years now, but Joe Musgrove is just having a great season with the Padres. And I know the Jays have a very, very good starting rotation, but you can never have too much pitching, never have too much starting pitching. Musgrove is pitching like an ace as he approaches free agency. So that's probably, you know, the objective name that, you know, deserves to be on that short list. But I do also want to highlight Rowdy Tellez, especially, you know, at a time that we talk about how the Jays could use more hitting, how they could use more left-handed hitting. And I looked at his numbers and, you know, he's got 9 homers and an .833 OPS. And, you know, I could think of a team in the AL East that would benefit from that kind of production. So it's not to totally second guess it. These trades have long shelf lives where we kind of assess them. But, and Trevor Richards has been good. He was useful for the Blue Jays in 2021, still useful for the Blue Jays this year. And they're going to need him as the season moves on. But I think just worth highlighting, Rowdy Tellez having a lot of success with Milwaukee, driving in tons of runs, 9 homers, and really hitting well.
And good for him. Right? Because like a guy who obviously we got to know well and who was around for a while, and just like the opportunity was not going to be there for him to have consistent playing time with the Blue Jays. And it seems like consistent playing time is what he needed. So he went to a place where he was going to get that opportunity. He's made the most of it, right? So like that's a great story. Like it's hard not to be happy for Rowdy Tellez. Like how cool would it be to see him in an All-Star game, right?
Yeah.
He's playing his way there. I'm going to go with Liam Hendricks, who, I mean, you could have answered this like for a while.
Yes.
Since he left the Jays. Like it was a long time ago that, you know, the Jays first picked up Hendricks when he was kind of like DFA limbo. He was kind of being like DFA'd, claimed, like being passed around the edges of organizations, and the Blue Jays picked him up and then he got away. And then the Blue Jays brought him back for a second stint, traded for him, converted him to a reliever. Remember, this is a former starter at the time, converted him to a reliever, really useful reliever on the 2015 team. Ultimately traded to Oakland for Jesse Chavez. And it was in Oakland that Liam Hendricks became like the Liam Hendricks that we see today, like this like the shut down all-star closer, one of the best ninth inning arms in the game. And then there was a third opportunity to bring Liam Hendricks back when Oakland, you know, let him go to free agency, and the Blue Jays like brought him to the facility in Dunedin, had conversations with him. Hendricks ended up going to the White Sox for 3 years, $54 million. And I think a lot of us looked at that deal for Hendricks, you know, getting into his early to mid 30s with a ton of mileage on his arm, with how hard he throws. I mean, like, you know, those final seasons in Oakland, like they used him a ton. In 2019, he threw 85 innings. And wow. Like this, you know, you watch him throw and these are like high effort, high stress throws, and all of his appearances are in the ninth, or in leverage, or in save situations. There's very few low stress appearances for him. So I think a lot of us looked at that deal and thought, how's that going to work out, right? 3 years, $54 million, you know, relievers, they're very volatile. Well, Liam Hendricks just told everybody to shove it because he has maintained his fastball velo. His strikeouts and walks haven't been super consistent this year where they've been at his best, but he's still been like perfectly effective and serviceable. And he continues to be one of the better late game leverage options out of any bullpen in the game. So full credit to him for keeping it going here into his mid-30s, and hopefully he continues to, because he's a lot of fun to watch.
He's been great. He's been so good. And yeah, I think, you know, he also belongs on that short list of players for the Blue Jays that you would love to have back. And, you know, as you said, they have certainly had him before. They had tried to get him again, and he would, you know, you look at this bullpen, right? And Jordan Romano back from his GI issues, that's huge for the Jays, you know, as they move ahead here. But man, they could really use more swing and miss. They don't have that. They don't have enough of that late in games. And Hendricks is exactly that. So, you know, we'll see Hendricks when the White Sox come to Toronto next week, so it won't be too long before he's pitching against his former team. But you know, he's someone that if he was ever back pitching the way he is now, that would totally transform their bullpen.
Yeah, and then the Blue Jays go to Chicago later on in June as well. So like, it's not going to get any easier from a velocity perspective, I'm sorry to say, for these Toronto Blue Jays hitters. Like, you are going to continue to see like some very hard throwing arms out of that Chicago rotation, obviously out of their bullpen as well. Like, the Blue Jays seen a ton of velocity to this point, and I don't know if there's like, I guess in the Royals series, if you get Greinke, that could help kind of pull things back down a little bit. But yeah, lots of velocity still coming for the Blue Jays. And oh hey, here on Thursday night, they're about to get Shohei Ohtani, who's like 97-98. So there's another one for you. I don't know, are they getting Syndergaard in the series? Four game series. So
no.
Or are they not?
No, they're not. They're missing Syndergaard and Reed Detmers, because the Angels have a six man. Right. So they're getting Sandoval, they're getting some prospect who's recent draftee who's being called up, of course, Shohei. And then someone's escaping me.
Okay.
But they're missing Syndergaard.
All right. Well, missing Syndergaard, that'll
Lorenzen. That's the other one.
Lorenzen.
Right.
That's, I was saying the Jays should sign Lorenzen this past offseason and turn him into a starter. He's a hard thrower too. I was also saying, by the way, the Blue Jays should sign Chad Kuhl, who's having a very nice year, as long as we're patting ourselves on the back here.
That's right.
let's look at the Blue Jays rotation though, because like, you know, we probably don't focus on it enough just because like the lack of offense has been like just this, you know, black hole that like sucks in like all energy and air around it. But like, this starting rotation, like the Blue Jays, Ben, have a rotation, like a legitimate five-man rotation that they just are turning over. The Blue Jays use six starters this year. We're not that far removed from opener and a guy, from Buddy Beauchers, from Ryan Feuerbend. Like, that wasn't that long ago. Like, that's kind of like the cruelty of this Blue Jays season is that, like, for the last 2 years, the Blue Jays could do nothing but mash, but they couldn't get reliable starting pitching, and defensively they would, like, boot the ball all over the diamond. Well, now they have tremendous starting pitching, and defensively they're actually pretty good, but they can't hit. So it's just like a complete reversal. It's, you know, baseball is the cruelest sport in the world, but I don't know that we can say enough about the job that this starting rotation has done and continues to do.
Wasn't Tanner Roark pitching for them last year?
Yes.
I think he was.
Yes, he was.
So, yes, to further underscore that point. So, yeah, it's a lot better now. It's good for a couple reasons. I mean, of course, you need that, especially at a time that the offense is down. And then second, as you move forward, you know, you start thinking about deadlines and potential additions to this team. And I'm not thinking about starting rotation. I'm just not. And that might be good because, you know, we saw Tyler Mahle was placed on the restricted list. I've heard rumblings about other potential deadline starters who might be, you know, not eligible to really pitch for the Toronto Blue Jays. So there are other arms, but it's a market that is always expensive. And if you don't have to shop for starting pitching at the trade deadline, that's a great thing. Because, you know, for the Jays, it's not just that they have five solid starters, but Gausman and Manoah are pitching like aces. So if you make it to the playoffs and you're turning the ball over to Gausman, Manoah, and let's say Berríos, you are thrilled with that. Like, that is, you're just not going to do much better. That is a great, great position to be in from a starting pitching standpoint. So you have to be thrilled with it. And I think for Gausman, just to kind of start with him, because I think he is the ace of this staff in so many ways. And he pitched on Tuesday, which is the last game the Jays played. And, you know, it's just 23 swinging strikes. It is six scoreless innings. He is so consistent out there. He is missing bats. He is extremely tough to hit. And six scoreless, it's almost just like you hardly even note it anymore. I mean, we're noting it, but like you just expect it. It's just he has been so good that that's become the expectation.
Yeah, it's amazing how commonplace like 23 swinging strikes is for him. It just feels like that's just what it is every time out. He had the one hiccup against Seattle, and I think there's a belief that Seattle had something on him and kind of had an idea of what was coming. I don't know if he was tipping or if they were able to see something. Kind of heard the Red Sox talking about that with Seattle as well, that maybe they've been very good at picking things up on opposition starters and just understanding what's coming their way. It certainly sticks out in like Kevin Gausman's CV this year, that one outing against Seattle where he wasn't missing bats. The hitters were laying off of his splitter in a way that they typically are not able to. So and it looks like he was able to make the adjustment pretty quickly going into St. Louis. Whatever he was doing, I don't think he was doing against Cardinals. The Cardinals didn't know about it because like it was just another classic Gausman outing. It's interesting. The guy I want to talk about is actually Kikuchi. It's not one of those, you know, top of the rotation arms that the Blue Jays have. And it's, you know, Kikuchi's most recent outing against Cincinnati on the weekend. You look at the way that outing started, and it was like walk, wild pitch, walk, ground rule double, walk, hit a dude. Like it was just spiraling. Ross Stripling's warming up in the bullpen. Kikuchi was probably like one or two more like balls dropping in from being out of that game. And when things go really badly like that and are spiraling on you, the easiest thing to do is to fall back into old habits. And the easiest thing to do is to lean back on the things that you would lean on in the past. And for a guy like Yusei Kikuchi, that would be, okay, I'm going to throw my cutter and I'm going to throw my slow slider and I'm going to go back to the guy who I was before, because all these adjustments and all these tweaks and changes that I'm making clearly aren't working today and I'm not having success with them. And the really impressive thing I saw from him was he stuck with them. If anything, that outing was the most he has trusted his fastball to this point. Like he threw it like 70% of the time. He leaned on that mid-90s fastball from the left side, which is something the Blue Jays have been begging him to do. And it wasn't that easy earlier on in the season. And the fact that he faced that adversity and stuck to the process with that fastball, leaned on it, stuck with the hard slider. The Blue Jays want him throwing that like 86 to 89 slider, didn't fall back on the cutter that he loved so much in a prior life. to me, the fact that he stuck with those adjustments was like a really like good thing, encouraging thing to see, because that was a test and he passed it and he came through it and stuck with what he's trying to do. And lo and behold, he ended up getting through like, you know, 4 or 5 innings that day on a day when he was almost out in the first and threw like 37 innings to, or 37 pitches to get 3 outs. To me, that was a very small thing that I think is actually really meaningful going forward.
Yeah. And those outings are always such a challenge, right? Like if you have a couple runs allowed early, it must take, you know, a certain focus to really get back there and continue to compete in those situations. And clearly Kikuchi is able to do that and was able to keep the Jays competitive in a game they ended up losing, of course, to Cincinnati, but still like to get to that point where he's kind of regained control of the outing and trusting the fastball. Like you said, that's an interesting kind of way to look at it, because early in the season, he was not trusting that pitch quite as much.
No. Anyone else on the starting staff you want to make note of before I bring us home with the Danny Jansen bit?
You know, just real quick on Jose Berríos, you know, he's had an up and down season really to this point, but his most recent start again against the Cardinals on Monday, it was good. And he ended up allowing, I think it was 3 earned runs that were charged to him, but a couple of those scored with Adam Simber on the mound. So I understand, like, they count. He shouldn't be given a free pass just because someone else was on the mound for it. But he really was effective and pitched into the 7th inning. And that's a big step forward for a guy that the Jays are definitely going to be relying on.
Yeah, absolutely. He's looked a lot more like himself. Very encouraging. So you mentioned that like top three for the Blue Jays in a playoff series, right? Think about the Gausman, Manoah, Berríos. Are we not going to get Jays Yankees in a playoff series and have those three versus Cole, Cortez, Severino? Is that not going to happen? It's going to happen, right?
I would sign up for it. It would be a lot of fun.
Right. And then the bullpens like King and Chapman. And by that point for the Blue Jays, it's Zulueta and Hernandez.
Right. Although, you know, I guess the Yankees are probably getting a first round bye. I hate to say it, but at this point, they're well positioned to get a first round bye into that ALDS.
Maybe it's the Rays that sneak in there as they so often do. We shall see. All right, Danny Jansen. I want to bring it home with Danny Jansen because he had the 2 home runs against St. Louis on Tuesday. And if you actually go back to when he came back from the IL in late August of 2021, he is 28 for 88 since that point.
Wow.
Hitting .318, .381, .795.
Wow.
With a .217 WRC plus, 11 homers in 97 plate appearances. Don't know that that's quite sustainable, but I do know that he is hitting the crap out of the ball right now and looking like just one of the better offensive catchers in baseball. And it's funny, you pull up the spray chart over that point as well. All of his balls in play, his hits, his outs, everything, all to the left side.
Yeah.
Everything to the, there's no point in even fielding a right fielder against Danny Jansen right now, because literally nothing has gone that way. And if it does go that way, it leaves the yard. So what's the point? It doesn't matter. Like, don't put anybody over there. Like, Danny Jansen should be the most shifted player in baseball because he is completely embraced into like the Mike Zunino pull happy catcher profile. Like, that's just what he's been, and it's working for him. So like, the question going forward is, do pitchers start approaching him differently? And does he start seeing everything away, 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 away? Probably. I would imagine he starts getting pitched differently. Will that lead to some slumps? Yeah, probably. Like, there's probably going to be some times where he's like not quite getting the loft on the ball, or he's hitting everything into the ground. And for him going forward, you got to think anything in the ground is going to be an out, because it's going to be the left side and he's going to be shifted extremely heavily. But what I know, as I just mentioned, is that Mike Zunino exists, and Mike Zunino has existed for a long time in baseball. And if Danny Jansen can be Mike Zunino, if he can like hit a bunch of home runs, the pull heavy approach, like, he's a catcher, right? Like, the standard for an MLB catcher is like an 85 WRC plus, right? If you hit like 230 as a catcher, you're great. If you have like a 300 OBP as a catcher, it's like beautiful, right? So if Danny Jansen, who is totally capable of going like 230, 330, 430, something along those lines, if he does that over the rest, like, he's going to have a very long career. in baseball. He's going to have a lot of jobs in MLB as a catcher because of how like dependable he is behind the plate and how well he works with the pitching staff, even with this super pull heavy approach. So like there's going to be peaks and valleys, but I do think it is a sustainable approach for him going forward because of the position he plays.
Yeah. I mean, if he's able to get to that offensive kind of threshold that you named there, I think the Jays would be thrilled. I do think it would lead to a lot of playing time and a lot of success for him. You know, two catchers on this team that can hit. Kirk too. I mean, just an incredible strike zone command that he has, walking more than he strikes out. Those are tough things to do. But, you know, back to Jansen, I think that he's really, from what he's told us, like he's really keyed into just being a bit more aggressive, seeking those pitches that he can pull, consciously, deliberately trying to pull the ball, and then letting the results follow, which have been, you know, great, great results. So clearly he's going to keep doing that. I think you're right to say that, you know, pitchers probably going to attack him with soft stuff away, because, you know, you're not going to serve it over the middle of the plate for him, even if he is batting eighth or he's the catcher. Clearly they need to attack him differently. So at the same time though, Jansen's someone who has in his career taken a lot of walks. So if he ends up walking and getting on base that way, mm-hmm. nothing wrong with that. So it's an interesting dynamic. He's been hitting great since he came back, and that's huge for the Jays.
Yeah, that's what got him to the big leagues, was the walks, right? Was the plate approach, was the power and the discipline. Like his bat got him to the big leagues. It wasn't his defense that got him to the defense. In a lot of ways, has come around and like advanced and progressed a lot since he was in the majors, to the point now where, like, you know, just from talking to Blue Jays pitchers, there's like so much confidence that Jansen has behind the plate. And I think he does a really nice job in handling guys. And like, this is not the easiest staff to handle. You got some vets on this staff with like some very clear ideas of what they want to do. Yeah. And you have a youngster on this staff in Alek Manoah who has a very clear idea of what he wants to do. Like, it's not the easiest staff to handle. And I think Jansen does like a really good job of it. And it's funny because like throughout this offense wide slump the Blue Jays have been through, like you keep hearing, oh, they got to change their approach, they got to go the other way, they got to use all fields, why don't they just poke singles the other way, why don't they force pitchers to like, Danny Jansen's like, nah, I'm only going to left, I'm trying to pull everything. And that's what he's thinking at the plate, is like, I want to pull everything. Like, Danny Jansen's a guy who for a long time was trying to be an opposite field approach guy, a use all fields guy. And in the box, he said this, like his head was clouded by all of those thoughts of like needing to go the other way and all of those like cues and mechanical things that he was thinking about to try to get balls to right field or even back up the middle. And he said that like it clouded his head and balls were just getting on him too fast. And once he let all that go, and once he stopped doing like 15 different drills before a game to try to go the other way and just focused on like 2 to 3 drills, they're going to let him tap into his pull power. All of a sudden he unlocked himself, and all of a sudden he was able to be the guy who he's been over these last 97 plate appearances since he came back from the IL last year. So kind of goes to show like the answer isn't always go the other way. The answer isn't always use all fields. Sometimes for certain guys, the answer is actually just tap more into the pull ability.
Oh, yeah. There are a number of hitters on this team who have incredible ability to all fields. And it's impressive, especially with the pitching quality in Major League Baseball. But not everyone has to do that. And if Jansen just keeps yanking them, like he literally hit the foul pole on Tuesday night and hit another one down the left field line, that's great. The Jays are thrilled with that. And Charlie Montoya too said, you know, when he's looking at his offense as a whole, he's kind of thinking that it might just take one guy to get hot. So maybe that guy's Jansen, and maybe that eases some pressure. I mean, who knows? Stranger things have happened when it comes to getting an offense on track. The Jays obviously need that, and Jansen is doing his part.
He'll be in the two hole before he knows it.
That's right.
He keeps this up. That's what happened to Santiago Espinal. He's the only guy hitting. It was like, whoop, straight up to the hole. That was the hilarious thing about that game on Tuesday. It was the only guy in the Jays lineup who didn't have a hit was Santiago Espinal.
Yeah.
Who had been the only guy who had been hitting. And oh, by the way, again, they went like 2 for 14 with runners in scoring position and left a bunch of dudes on base.
Yeah. Good for Espinal, though. Like, what a season he's having. They've needed every one of those hits.
Oh, yeah. No, bona fide everyday big leaguer at this point. And who said, like, when the Blue Jays traded Steve Pierce to the Red Sox for Santiago Espinal, who said they are getting a future bona fide everyday big league second baseman?
Not me. That's for sure. You can look up the tape. Please don't, but you could.
I don't think you could play back ATL from that moment, and that we would have said that. So yeah, baseball continues to surprise us, right? What's the one thing we all knew coming into this season the Blue Jays were going to hit? If anything, the one thing we know is the Blue Jays are going to hit. Well, they haven't hit to this point, but I still think they will.
Yes.
And I'm still going to keep saying that. I'm still going to keep being wrong for a while until I do think eventually I'm going to be right.
Yes, agreed. I think that's one prediction that we both would definitely agree on.
So that's Ben Nicholson-Smith. I'm Arden Zwelling. I want to thank our producers this week, Mike Rogerson and Nick Andrade. I want to thank all of you for listening. Talk to you next week on At The Letters.